As this summer rolls along, we keep swimming through more crap. Edwin Diaz is still a Met, and COVID's made a comeback. Garrett Cole's tested positive, and I don't know what's in store. We got a lot of hot stove to talk about, the NBA free agency, and more. This is Downtown Sports. I am the mouth of the South, John Schiavone, along with my co-host, the Beast of the East, Jonathan Perriente. This is Downtown Sports. This is where sports come home. And oh my God, the Lakers just put their 2020 team back together with a couple of improvements. The Knicks have re-signed everybody. A lot of moves being made, Beast. A lot of moves being made. Also, NBA draft just happened.
Who would have thought things explode in the NBA in just 3 days? Incredible.
I mean, but this is the way the NBA always works. The draft, a lot of deals made on draft night. Also, let's not forget about those. And we have what we thought were going to be the top 10 draft picks. Yep. We're going to see how far off Chris DeLarge was from reality.
All right. Well, I have the draft up officially right here. Now, Chris,
we'll make this at 8-8. Let's go into the draft for 8 minutes.
All right. So Chris put it number one, and I think it was very appropriately so. Cade Cunningham would go number one in the draft.
Okay.
Point guard out of Ohio State.
Yeah, so, okay, he went first in the draft, and on Chris's list, it was the same, correct?
The Pistons took Cade Cunningham, number one. One of the best three-point shooters, they call him in the game at this point. In the game, he can shoot 43.8% from downtown. Very much compared him a little bit to Luka Doncic, kind of a bit. Better fit as a point forward like Luka Doncic, or if you want to go old school, he can be Grant Hill 2.0.
That's what they were trying to get with Blake Griffin, but that didn't work out for him real well.
Yeah. Well, they say a lot of those intangibles could play a role for Cade Cunningham. And again, Pistons had the worst record. You pick them number one. They're trying to rebuild. You need a star to build that team up.
By the way, the team with the worst record actually got the first pick this time around. Good job, draft lottery.
My goodness. When was that a time it never worked out, right?
Shit. The Knicks had the worst record. How many years in a row? We never got pick one.
How about 2 years ago when we should have drafted Zion, we ended up getting the three pick and got RJ.
I think we'll be better with RJ Barrett than the Pelicans will be with Zion Williamson. I swear Barrett will be the best of this class. Just give him time.
All right. Let's go to the next pick. And it was for Chris. He said the number two prospect is Evan Mobley, the center out of Michigan.
No, that's not who the Rockets got.
No.
The Rockets drafted Jalen Green.
And Chris, ironically enough, had him three. Jalen Green.
Okay.
So a little flip-flop. So Green went number two. Mobley went number three to the Cavaliers.
I guess that's like fouling a pitch off almost, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, so that's not even – that's only strike one. The two picks being reversed is only strike one here. That's good.
But, yeah, so Evan Mobley, he's a USC center, averaging 16.5 points per game.
In college, let me just say something. In college, 16 points a game is not a slouch. Like, a lot of people hear, he only averaged 16 points a game. He only averaged 18 points a game. In the way that the NCAA has men's college basketball set up, if you are able to score 20-plus points in a game, you're a superstar.
Well, he's being compared to a more mobile Bam Adebayo.
That's good.
If you compare him to somebody like Adebayo, that could be very big. I mean, is he going to score as much as Adebayo does? Who knows? We'll see how that transitions onto the NBA stage. It's a big difference when you go from college to the professionals.
And let's talk about Jalen Green real quick. Yeah. Athletic guard, shot maker. Let me see. Green earned gold medals at the 2017 FIBA U16 America's Championship.
He's an international.
2018, 2019 as well.
Drive to the glass. He has NBA level quickness. He has a very solid 3-point shot, about 36.5%.
He opted to become the first player ever to join the G League Ignite instead of playing a year of college basketball.
The G League might not have been a bad thing. The G League is where you can really develop your skill and really open up some scouts' eyes. Maybe get you on a professional contract.
Look, he's 6'6", 178 pounds. He could definitely bulk up a little bit. Yeah. But he has a 6'7" wingspan. He has great size for a shooting guard. And by the way, defensively, he's great. They're saying his defense is plus.
How good are
so
we
that's
talking
great.
How good of a plus defender are we talking? Like, he can get, you know, he averages maybe a couple blocks a game, give you about two or three blocks per game.
Well, it's more his work on the key.
Okay.
And by the way, let's see what else. Green is very great off the dribble.
Yeah.
Let's see. He averaged 1.38 points per transition possession, 96th percentile in the G League.
That's not bad at all. It's actually very solid. They say here, Chris says he can be the next version of Clyde McGlide Drexler or possibly this generation of Zach LaVine.
Well, here's what the NBA, by the way, this is all the stuff I'm reading is from NBA.com/draft/2021/prospects. So the defensive analysis with him, it says he possesses the tools. He had to face a learning curve in the G League, but that was good that he went to the G League so that he actually saw some sort of NBA offenses and learned how to play NBA defense. He's got quickness. He's got the wingspan. He's got the, he's got the physical tools to be a good defender. He could hold his own at both guard spots. And the longer he played last season, the better he got. So great pick. Great pick at number two.
All right. Let's go to the number four.
Three, which we said Evan Mobley. Number four, who did Chris have?
Now, this is, again, going to be another reverse order. Chris said Jalen Suggs at four. He went five in the draft, did Jalen Suggs, the point guard out of Gonzaga. Number four was who Chris put at five, and Scotty Barnes, the small forward out of FSU.
You know, I'm not necessarily against this pick by the Raptors. They're trying to replace Kawhi Leonard.
Well,
I mean, Scotty a 6'8", 225-pound forward is definitely somebody to be reckoned with.
Well, Chris called Scotty Barnes an elite defender who can guard the one through the five. He can rebound. He can pass at the small forward position. But the key ingredient is he a shooter? Can he run an offense? That's something we don't know about Barnes yet. He's more of, according to Chris, kind of like a third wheel, kind of like a Draymond Green, if you will, of Golden State.
Look,
if you were to look at him right now, at least as of now.
He's got a 7'2" wingspan at 6'8". That's amazing.
Okay.
So we'll that's just God gifted right there.
That's definitely a superior defense. You need
also, Barnes is very, very good at half court. Let's see. One of the most unique players in college basketball last season, once again, according to NBA.com, Barnes played primarily point guard as a freshman in Florida State, generating nearly a third of his possessions in transition while scoring 1.05 points per transition. That's the 56th percentile. Barnes showed the ability to grab and go off the glass. A lot of his shot attempts were cleaning up rebounds and putting the ball back in. He puts pressure on the rim when looking for his own shot. He definitely puts pressure on the rim. He drives the ball. Let's see, 1.29 points per finishing opportunity inside. That's the 76th percentile, 0.61 points per floater. So floating shots, no good.
He'll have some talent. He'll have some talent where he will be going in Toronto. He will have some people that will turn him into a good scorer.
He's going to be able to, what he's going to be able to do is bully smaller players. He's going to drive the ball. He knows how to dribble drive. He knows how to pass when driving as well. So that's amazing. And then his defense is the 74th percentile in the league, allowing 0.56 points per one-on-one possession. Barnes more than held his own as an individual defender at the college level, according to the NBA.
Let's go over to Jalen Suggs for a moment, the point guard out of Gonzaga. They say Chris says he's the best defender in the draft. Had 1.9 steals, leading the NCAA tournament, and pushed the pace just like Chris Paul. As a young Chris Paul, anyway, he could pass, shoot, he can rebound. He has some comparisons to Malcolm Brogdon, maybe to Drew Holiday a little bit, maybe even more Gary the Glove Payton. Remember Gary Payton?
Yep. Let me just say this about this young man. Let me say this about this young man. Are you ready?
Please.
Only allowed 0.6 points per one-on-one possession while defending always pretty much the best defender on the best offensive player on the floor.
So he was like a Darrell Revis in the NFL, a lockdown defender.
He also does a lot of little things correctly. He knows how to rotate to draw a charge. He knows how to pursue rebounds. Yeah, this guy cleans glass for a point guard. That's amazing. He, like, obviously he's a great defender, and he ranked second of the WCC in transition scoring at 5.2 points per game transition. Averaging 1.818 points per shot around the rim, 59th percentile, regularly turn the corner out of ball screens. By the way, this is not from me. This is all NBA.com.
This is incredible for a guy that, and he went number five.
Yep.
This guy could have been a number one pick over Cunningham if everything, if you kind of look at it this way. Maybe he could have gone number one instead of five.
Maybe. We got a couple more minutes to talk about this. So
let's go to the next one. At number six, Chris put down Jonathan Kuminga. He ended up going number seven. To Golden State.
Yes, he did. So the Thunder instead got Josh Giddey.
Chris had him at number nine.
Wow.
He's out of Australia, is Josh Giddey. Another guy that can pass, that can score. He's a good rebounder. So Giddey, from what I've read, is at least going to be – Chris kind of compared him a little bit to a Pistol Pete Maravich. Speedy forward that can move the ball around. He's not the scorer like a Bernard King or maybe even Alex English. Like, those were two point guards we can definitely compare us to. But he has – he's kind of like a better version of Evan Turner.
1.32 points per game per finishing opportunity inside. That's 74th percentile in college.
Not terrible.
Here's what's terrible. Floaters, no good. 45th percentile per floater, only 0.75 points. He did a solid job of picking and choosing his spots inside. Knows he possesses touch, knows how to go to the rim with touch, knows how to go to the rim hard. Only problem is he's not drawn many fouls while attacking the rim.
That's a bit of a problem, and that's something that he's going to have to clean up. You're Giddey. He's going to have to learn how to adapt to the stage of the NBA. And
well, here's how he could help himself. Because he has another skill that could actually replace that skill, which actually could even be better. He was ranked second in the NBL in points created by passes out of the pick and roll at 9.4 points per game.
So he can create his own shot.
Yep.
Okay.
And then defensive analysis says he's great on the glass, knows how to protect, great, probably the most productive rebounder in the NBL. He makes great plays in passing lanes. He has great anticipation skills, meaning he knows where his players are going to be and knows where to put the ball.
Okay.
This is some really good stuff here. I like this pick. I think the Thunder got themselves a really good player. Now let's look at Jonathan Kuminga.
Jonathan Kuminga, yes. So the Warriors took Kuminga. He's another small forward. He played in the G League. Chris calls him a superior
athlete. By the way, shouts to the G League for getting two of the first six picks.
Chris calls him a superior athlete with an NBA body and room to grow. Very good mid-range shooter. Can rebound pretty good, about 7.2 rebounds a game.
He has a 6'11" wingspan at 6'8".
Needs to improve free throw shooting. That's something that will be something for him to improve. He basically, for Chris, is another version of DeMar DeRozan.
Here's what the 18-year-old averaged in the G League. 15.8 points per game at 7.2 rebounds and 2.7 assists.
It's not bad. I'm curious, though, to see how he will fit on a Warriors team that you have Steph Curry. You're going to get back Klay Thompson. You're going to have Wiseman coming back another year stronger. You still have a lot of the core. Obviously, Draymond. You still have the trio of NBA experience in your big three. Your big trio that's been there winning NBA titles since day one.
By the way, this kid blocks shots.
So that could make the Warriors, if he's developed right, a very elite defensive team as well as a good high scoring team.
Do you know what I'm looking at? I'm looking at the 19-year-old backup to Draymond Green. That's what I'm looking at here.
You think he's going to be the heir to Draymond?
Not the heir, but like he's going to like he even though he's only 6'6", he plays like 6'8". So he could be backing up Draymond and, you know, getting defensive possessions, great rebounder, says he has the ability to block shots here. You know, he flashed significant defensive upside against a far older competition than him in the G League, being 18 years old and averaging 16 points a game in a man's league, a boy in a man's league averaging 16 points a game. That's impressive.
He's going to have a lot of room to grow when he goes to Golden State, and he will learn some great knowledge under Steve Kerr. That should be great.
So let's just get the last two.
Yep. The James last few Unite was number 7. Unite ended up going to the Hornets at number 11. So he went outside the top 10, a shooting guard out of UConn. Guy that can create good space with hesitations, good step back shot, good 3-point shooter. And basically he can get to the rim or lay it up or put you on a poster. And he can also pass as a shooting guard. He's not quite a James Harden type player, but he can develop into a good off the dribble 3 shooter. Chris believes he's the second coming of Jamal Murray.
Yeah, because 18.7 points a game and 6 rebounds. That's about Jamal Murray numbers in college. All Big East first team honors. He lifted the Huskies to their first NCAA tournament appearance since 2016.
Will he surpass him? I'm going to be very curious to see if Bunite can be a second coming of Murray, as Chris believes he can be.
Let's look at this. First in the Big East in isolation, scoring at 1.9 points per game. Second in the Big East in handoff, scoring 1.7 points per game. Ranked 5th in the Big East in transition, scoring at almost 4 points per game. And ranked 5th in the Big East in off-screen, scoring at 1.5 points per game.
Hornets
could do it all.
Hornets could have a very special talent right there.
So that is somebody for LaMelo Ball to pass the ball to.
Let's see where that works out. Let's go to our next one. It's Moses Moody. Chris had him at number 8. He ended up getting drafted by Golden State at number 14.
Chris must be very happy with his Warriors.
Well, Moses Moody is a shooting guard out of Arkansas. Again, another very easy shooter. He can defend. He's a good...
By the way, the Magic drafted instead Franz Wagner. 6'9" guard and forward out of Michigan. 6'9", 220 pounds. Born in Germany. Another European-born player. 12 points, 6.5 rebounds, and 3 assists per game earned him all Big Ten second team honors as a sophomore.
That's very solid. We'll see what he can do. Moody can be a 50-40-90 player, as Chris describes him. And he's very similar to, a champion on the Bucks, Chris Middleton. Has that a lot of Chris Middleton's type of scoring.
All right, so what did he have for number 9?
Number 9. We already talked about him, Josh Giddey. The 10th man with number 10 is Alperen Şengün out of Turkey, a center. Played in
but
the Turkish
he
league.
Was not picked. It was Zaire Williams. And number 9 was Davion Mitchell.
Şengün got taken 16th by the Thunder and was eventually traded to the Rockets. Şengün at 18 dominated the BSL league in Turkey. He has a great amount of post moves. He can shoot in the paint, a good perimeter shooter.
240 pounds, 6'9". This is a big boy.
And he is being compared to another very athletic center, DeMarcus Cousins.
That would make sense. 15.9 points per game and 12.3 rebounds per game.
Can you imagine if this man becomes another Boogie?
The 2018 FIBA U17 World Championship.
If this man becomes another Boogie Cousins.
Oh, maybe a better one.
You think a better one
could
than the
be.
Current than the one we have?
Could
well,
be.
Let's see if he can develop into that. And I'll be very curious. I'll be very curious when he has matchups against DeMarcus Cousins in the NBA when that time comes. I'd like to see how he will stack up against him. Maybe we can actually see it with our own eyes.
And what they're saying is they want him, according to what I'm seeing here, teams would have liked him to lose a little weight, maybe go down by about 10 pounds so he could add some explosiveness to his game. But as he's lost weight, he's become more explosive and has improved his mobility.
Okay. He's definitely, let's see where he's at, but I think he's going to be something. Going to the Rockets, I'm curious how they're going to really kind of utilize him there. The Rockets, again, they're rebuilding. They're completely rebuilding their team. It's not the same Rockets team anymore. So a lot of these players that we've talked about are going on teams that are really getting younger, and it's going to take them a few years, I'd say, until we can start talking about them, maybe if they can get to the forefront of maybe a playoff caliber team. It's going to be a little time. But with that, that wraps up our draft and the top 10 players that Chris showed to us and sent us. Now let's go to the wild trades that we've already had in the NBA hot stove. We barely have been 2 days in, and we've already had moves left and right.
We've got to go through this quick. So let me just go through each team real quick. You can respond afterwards. So we'll start in the alphabetical order by city. The Atlanta Hawks, they extended Trae Young. Doctor. They agreed to a one-year deal with Gyorgy Deng, and Solomon Hill is set to return. Good. Okay. Boston, no signings yet.
Not yet.
Nets, Blake Griffin returns on a one-year deal. Patty Mills comes to the team on a two-year deal.
That's actually a nice addition. Brooklyn didn't have an extra shooter, and that could be huge for them because obviously, look what happened to Joe Harris when you need.
Yeah, there needs to be somebody else on the floor. Bruce Brown comes back on a one-year deal.
Bruce Brown is a good sign. So you have that depth there. Now the key is, can the Nets big three be healthy?
Here's another piece of depth: James Johnson.
Okay, James Johnson was good. I liked him on the bench. Again, the Nets need to build that depth on their team. That's what was missing in the playoffs last year, this past season. They needed that and didn't
have
it.
And here's the Hornets. They traded Devontae Graham to the Pelicans, and they sign Ish Smith to a one-year deal.
All right.
The Chicago Bulls.
Mm-hmm. It's a big one.
DeMar DeRozan got a three-year deal in a sign trade. Lonzo Ball is getting 4 years and almost $90 million in a sign and trade. Alex Caruso agrees to a four-year deal, and the Bulls traded Daniel Theis to the Rockets in a sign and trade.
The Bulls, I'll definitely say, got a lot stronger. DeRozan's going to add something. Lonzo is going to help that offense move. I'm telling you guys, the Bulls are going to be dangerous. I don't know if they're going to get to the next level dangerous, but they're going to be good. And
They're going to be in the playoffs. They will be a sixth seed. Fifth seed, sixth seed, seventh seed, one of them.
I'll be curious if you challenges them. Let's keep
going. The Cavaliers. They apparently believe in Jared Allen because they signed him to a five-year extension.
Makes sense. Jared Allen was a very solid player when he was on the Nets. And we never really, again, he got traded, which kind of was unfortunate. If you're Brooklyn, it did happen at a time when, James Harden was coming. I get it.
Yep.
But I think he'll do fine. I think with the Rockets and put a few pieces, I think the Rockets.
Cavaliers. Okay, Cavaliers.
If you keep Colin Sexton, maybe you have something there.
The Cavs are a couple of years away, but they signed Jared Allen to be there for when they get to their deal. So he's the first part of the rebuild of the Cavs. Now the Mavericks. Mm. Remember Tim Hardaway Jr. 4 year deal with them.
They re-signed him.
Yes, they did. Right. The Mavericks re-signed Boban Marjanovic. I can't even pronounce this guy.
Boban Marjanovic. Yeah.
Boban Marjanovic. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Then Sterling Brown is there now.
Okay.
And Reggie Bullock went from the Knicks to the Mavericks 3 year deal.
I'm worried the Knicks are going to regret that, letting Bullock kind of go like that. I know Bullock was very solid. I loved Bullock. Great shooter. He did a lot of good things.
Oh, man. Oh, you want to know a team that just might have punched their ticket to the NBA title? The Denver Nuggets.
And
listen to this. Austin Rivers 1 year. Jeff Green 2 years. They re-signed Will Barton, and Jermichael Green agrees to a two-year deal.
Well, getting Jeff Green was a nice addition. He really helped Brooklyn. And now you put him on the Nuggets with a healthy Jamal Murray coming back with Jokic and a few other pieces around him.
Yep.
I'd say Denver's going to go in with a vengeance this year. They're going to go in with a real vengeance.
Yeah.
When they get back on the NBA.
Here's the Pistons real quick. Corey Joseph. 3 year deal.
Okay.
Kelly Olynyk agrees to a 3 year deal and Trey Lyles 2 years.
Okay. So the Nuggets are going to have some depth there. I like that. The Nuggets are going to have some good pieces. They're going to have some scoring that they were really missing last year at the end of the playoffs. I won't be surprised if the Nuggets can move themselves into the top four in the Western Conference if they do this right.
That's cool. So far, let's keep going. The Pistons moves are not that big. Warriors. Here we go. Curry got a 4 year extension, obviously.
$200 million. He's the first NBA player to have two deals at $200 million.
Congratulations, Stephen Curry, a player that nobody thought was. Well, yeah, he has a player that thought a player that everybody thought was going to be nothing.
As much as I hate
level.
To say it, Chris, I have to admit when I'm wrong. Steph Curry is a talent, and he deserves the money he's getting.
Yes, he does. Otto Porter Jr. comes there on a 1 year deal as well.
Okay, Porter Jr. is good. That'll help boost the Warriors.
And another guy whose name I can't pronounce, I'll fail miserably right now. It's Nemanja Bjelica, I think. Bjelica.
Nemanja Bjelica. Yes.
Bjelica. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
He came there on a veterans minimum deal.
Okay.
Let's see. For the Clippers, Kawhi Leonard is testing free agency. Nicholas Bantam returns to the Clippers. Okay. And here's the Lakers.
Yep.
Carmelo Anthony, Dwight Howard, Trevor Ariza, Wayne Ellington, Kent Bazemore, Kendrick Nunn, Talen Horton Tucker, all these guys come back, and Howard returns.
They're getting back to Dwight Howard after they let him go to the Sixers.
Same thing with Trevor Ariza. They're getting him back after they let him go. Melo joins the fun in L.A. with LeBron. And here's the big move for the Lakers. Ready?
The biggest one of them all.
Malik Monk.
Oh, wow.
Agrees to a one-year deal.
Add that with Russell Westbrook joining the Lakers as well.
That's crazy.
Okay, it's very official. LeBron James did not like losing in the quarterfinals, and he is pissed.
Well, you want to know about pissed? Let me show you what pissed is. The Miami Heat. Kyle Lowry is going there. Butler agreed to a max contract extension. Duncan Robinson, 5 years. P.J. Tucker, 2 years.
P.J. Tucker's going to the Heat. Oh, my goodness.
Yep. Gabe Vincent, 2 years. The Heat have agreed to a deal with Max Strauss. Dwayne Dedman is going there on a one-year deal, and reports are Markieff Morris is heading to Miami.
Markieff, wow. Okay, well, the Heat want to get back to where they were in the bubble series when they got to the finals against the Lakers. So no surprise, they want to build up their team just like the Lakers are, maybe with a possible NBA Finals rematch on their minds, perhaps? Pat Riley?
Perhaps.
This is Pat Riley we're talking about.
Ooh, Knicks have been active.
Okay, who have they got?
A lot of people returning. We got Evan Fournier on a four-year deal.
That's a good addition.
Derrick Rose is coming back on a three-year deal.
Great.
Nerlens Noel for 3 years. Alec Burks for 3 years. Good. Taj Gibson's coming back on a one-year deal.
Good. All right, I'm happy with that. The Knicks, you want that core to stay there. That's what got you to the playoffs. You don't want to ruin the chemistry that you had. RJ, another year stronger, another year for Emmanuel Quickly. The Knicks are going to have a very nice club to look forward to that we can get behind and be excited
about. As long as they re-sign Randle.
Well, the Julius Randle move, I'm still kind of a little surprised they haven't locked him up yet.
I think they don't believe in him. And if they don't, that's terrible.
Is it that they don't believe in him? Or, you know, again, he came up small in the playoffs. He had never been in a playoff series before until that one. He had not played in a playoff. He had never led a team before, and he still, throughout the most part, really improved as a player in the NBA. And we're just going to say, he wasn't good enough. So I don't feel confident re-signing him, even though he literally carried that team on his back until the playoffs. I don't know about that.
They had better bring him back because Julius Randle really fits in this city. The city has taken to Julius Randle.
They've taken to the whole Knicks team in general, which is
finally
a thing to see. We've been waiting a long time as Knicks fans to see the Knicks relevant again.
Let's check on another couple of teams here that have made big moves. Yep. That would be here's the Sixers signing Andre Drummond.
Okay, that's a good addition to have with Joel Embiid with Ben Simmons. We'll have to see. I think they're going to move on from Ben Simmons.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Doesn't look like it yet. Apparently, they wanted a couple of players and 2 first-round picks. So I don't think Ben Simmons is going anywhere. Their asking price is too high. Look at the Suns here, though. Chris Paul has decided he's going to retire Phoenix Sun. 4-year deal with the Suns. That's the end of his career.
He'll be 41. He'll be 41 when he's retired.
Yep. Cameron Payne comes back on a 3-year deal.
Makes sense.
JaVale McGee agrees to a 1-year deal, and Abdel Nader returns on a 2-year deal.
Okay. I like the addition of JaVale McGee. That's going to be a nice extra scorer. I think the Suns kind of missed another scorer. Was struggling, if Paul was struggling, you know, you could only rely so much on DeAndre Ayton. You need other talent. You need other players to step up when they're not playing well. Cameron Payne did some good things, yes. But the Suns still were missing another secondary, maybe third scorer. So this is good. I think JaVale McGee is going to help him, a good veteran. I don't know if the Suns are going to get back to the finals like they did during this year. I don't know if we're going to see that again.
Well, especially not with what the Lakers just pulled. This is a nice little move for the Wizards, putting somebody next to Bradley Beal. Okay. Spencer Dinwiddie is going to go to the Wizards and be their starting point guard.
We thought the Knicks, I mean, we thought it was to the Knicks, a done deal. They were going to get Dinwiddie like easy. But no, Wizards swooped in and they took Dinwiddie.
And now he's got Beal to play with. You know, most of the time while Dinwiddie was the point guard of the Nets, he had nobody to throw to. Then when the big three came along, he got hurt.
Well, I'm going to be very curious how Dinwiddie fits in. This is a good, this is a very solid addition. I think the Wizards, we'll see what they are in the, we'll see if they can make a run. I can't say for sure, but I think they'll make a pretty decent run. Maybe they could challenge to be a playoff team like they came in into last year when Westbrook was at the helm. So we'll see.
We'll see. But you know what else we're going to find out when we come back? We got some NFL to talk about. Mm-hmm. The Giants got a lot of fight in them.
Literally.
Too bad they're fighting each other. Find out what I'm talking about back after this.
And we're back to Downtown Sports. I am the Beast of the East, Jonathan Perriente, along with my co-host, the Mouth of the South, John Schiavone. I want to thank Chris DeLarge for presenting us with the top 10 NBA draft picks. And before we dive into our NFL segment, football season's coming up already. Amazing. We're a month away. NFL season is about to begin in 1 month. Mouth, where can our listeners hear us?
Anchor, Breaker, Spotify, Radio Public, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, CastBox, Bullhorn, Podbay, Listen Notes, Verbalant, Podcast Addict. 14 different platforms, interviews, rants, shows, whatever you need every single week. We're Downtown Sports. We are where sports come home. And oh my God. Oh, my God. That's all I could say about this. Ready?
Yeah.
So on the first day of padded practice, by the way, this is Jordan Rannan's ESPN article. Mm-hmm. First day of padded practice ended abruptly when Joe Judge punished his players for a team-wide brawl. By the way, Daniel Jones was at the bottom of the pile.
Oh, boy.
So, according to Jordan, Judge could be heard delivering an expletive-laden tirade at his team after the scuffle, had them running 100 win sprints as punishment. They assembled more than 10 minutes of penalty-induced conditioning in a semicircle for one lambasting before practice suddenly ended. And Jones literally said, yeah, there are consequences for that kind of stuff. That's the way it is in a game. You have to keep your cool. There are consequences and it hurts your team. That was the message. I think everybody understands. That's what he said. So the incident started when Evan Engram retaliated after a late hit to Corey Clement. So Engram thinks it was a late hit to the running back, goes to protect the running back. Logan Ryan then comes and blasts Evan Engram from behind, and then the rest of the team, including Daniel Jones, they all jumped into the melee. They're fighting, they're beating the crap out of each other. There's piles of men. Jones was plucked out of the pile by Kenny Wiggins. This is Clement's response. He's like, hey, golly, I love it. At the same time, we don't want to get our quarterback hurt. Pretty sure Daniel knows that as well. I hope he thinks twice before jumping back in there again.
Okay, I admire
Oh, and here's Clement, by the way, again. Yeah, that's what you want to see. Even though he's not supposed to be doing that, hats off to her because you want to see a lot of guys do that.
Okay, so you want to see a lot of guys do that, Corey Clement. Let me so you want your quarterback to literally put his life on the line, get thrown into the pile to break up a fight. And God forbid, maybe he breaks his leg or maybe he tears an ACL.
He did say before that he hopes he thinks twice before jumping back in.
Daniel Jones has been in the league how many years?
This is now his third year.
You would think by your, maybe as a rookie, I could understand. Maybe you want to have control of your brigade. I could understand that maybe.
Yeah.
By year three, you should be jumping into a brawl to break up a fight knowing you're the quarterback of this football team. Really?
Knowing that you're, and then personally on top of that, knowing that your future is genuinely determined by how you play this year. And you're getting involved in fights. And then here's the Giants fighting with each other. Like, and I know a lot of people are going to say, well, that shows competitive fire and spirit, and they'll take that fight into the game.
You Evan Ingram started me? The whole fight in the first place.
You know what that shows me? Mm-hmm. They still have the same discipline problems that they had under Pat Shurmur with Joe Judge. I don't care how many times Joe Judge yells at them. I don't care how many wind sprints they have to run. These guys are not looking and acting like a team right now. They are not looking and acting like a team. Oh, yeah. And by the way, for the Jets, mm-hmm. we have Cameron Clark with a spinal cord contusion.
Oh, no. Bruce.
He had to be taken via ambulance to a local hospital after suffering the injury. Today, near the end of practice today, later on, the Jets announced that Clark had spinal cord contusion and will be kept in the hospital overnight for observation. And Clark's father, Al Clark, told ESPN that his son couldn't feel his legs.
That, I'm worried, could be an early sign of paralysis. Who knows if he'll even ever play again?
Anytime well, you have a spinal. According to his father, everything seems to be good so far. Well, and that he's expected to make a full recovery, but that's just.
Spinal injuries are no joke, ladies and gentlemen. And in the NFL, this is going to happen. You will have injuries like this. And we, you remember when Eric LeGrand, remember in his days at Rutgers, football player, and he was. On defense, on special teams, on a punt return. And then not only did he get knocked down on a hard hit, he then is now in a wheel. He's still now in a wheelchair and will never be able to play football again. Every move you make is very precious as an NFL athlete.
That's true.
Make the wrong move and your career is over. I wish the best for Clark. I hope he comes back healthy. I pray that he is going to get back on the field soon.
Yep.
But what I am curious about as a Jets fan, and we already have at least now starting to see what Zach Wilson can bring to the table after he finally agreed to a contract. He was the last top draft pick to finally reach a contract agreement. People were already starting to get worried. Oh, this is the Jets. They do these money talks in the contract. And
that's true.
And they take too long. And, oh, they're
stuck. That's also true.
Growth. Okay, he only missed 2 days of practice.
That's still 2 days that you needed your quarterback to be there.
Would you rather it be 2 days? Or would you rather it be a week?
Maybe I would have rather it have been no days and the Jets signed their freaking top draft pick.
Be lucky it was 2 days and not a week and not a month.
So you're telling me that you're going to give Joe Douglas and the Johnsons a pass on this?
Because look what happened when we had to lock up Sam Darnold to the same contract and get the contract situation with him sorted out. Look what happened to Darnold. Is he a Jet now? You know, we looked at Darnold as, oh, yeah, Darnold's going to be the saving grace of the Jet offense. He's the greatest quarterback we've had since Namath, right? We heard that a million times, didn't we? And how did Sam Darnold pan out?
Not well. He's going to pan out great for the Panthers.
Do you want that same thing to happen with Zach Wilson? You think? Do we want Zach Wilson to, again, be the next best thing, and then it doesn't pan out for Zach Wilson?
You know what? Perhaps you start Zach Wilson's career by not having him be mistrustful of the front office. Perhaps that's a good way to start. Maybe not having contract language hold up your savior star quarterback, who should have been Justin Fields, by the way, to come to practice. So it's a really good thing that so far the Jets running game seems to look really good.
Well, the good thing now is Zach Wilson's got his contract, and now we're getting a look at him now in training camp. And we've seen some good things out of him. We've seen some very positive things. He's clearly developed a chemistry connection with Elijah Moore, which is great because this is a potential top receiver on the Jets, a guy with a lot of speed, a guy that's very explosive. If Zach Wilson can utilize Elijah Moore to his full potential and have a good O-line protecting him.
Oh, let me talk about that O-line real quick before we go to
play. The Jets are going to have something.
let me talk about that online a little bit before we go to break. By the way, this is Daily News reporter DJ Ben-Ami II. Mm-hmm. He wrote, on the first play of an 11-on-11 scrimmage, Michael Carter burst left for a major gain of 15 yards. Then on the next play, Tevin Coleman showed good patience and allowed his blocks to set up for sneaking through the right A gap for a solid gain of first down. And Makai, I'm just watching a little bit of video footage right here,
yep,
really quickly. And here's Makai Becton and Elijah Vera Tucker going through drills, and they're, that looks nice. Oh, Becton, look at there. There you go. Taking on four or five people at a time. Block, 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 block. They're working Makai Becton. Good. To bump multiple rushers off at once.
So be more of a physical presence on the O-line.
And
missing from Becton.
If that happens, by the way, if that happens, I think we're going to be seeing a running game that can actually support a pass offense.
In other words, it really could be building something that maybe could make them a very dangerous presence in the AFC East. We'll see.
Definitely an annoying presence for some of the teams there. The Jets are not going to be the easy win that they were last year. But last year, they weren't even an easy win either. The Jets played tough in a lot of those games. They just lost. But here's the thing. We got two teams in the NFL going in two very specific directions. And they were not the teams that we were expecting. They were not the teams we were expecting. By the way, the last little bit, there's a little bit of an uncomfortable stat about Wilson in practice. He had finished 8 for 13, but no touchdowns. His biggest play was a 35-yard gain on a deep post, but it was underthrown, and he got sacked 3 times.
Well, again, these are things, again,
he's a rookie player. And according to reports, he looks uncomfortable in the pocket.
Well, again, it's only been a couple days that we've seen of Wilson in a camp yet. So we have to see how he bounces back. Now, he's making throws. Okay, good. The O-line, you still have to develop chemistry with that O-line. The O-line still has to. So this is, again, but these are growing pains. And look, I'd rather Zach Wilson's going through this now.
Yeah.
He's on an NFL field in an NFL game that counts. And this is happening in a real game.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And let me just say this. I'd rather the reports that I'm seeing out of the Jets with offensive linemen doing well and, maybe one injury and Zach Wilson developing rather than a bar six freaking pile up brawl where your offensive player smacks a defensive player. Then here comes Logan Ryan. So your star safety is attacking your star tight end after your star tight end attacks somebody else. And then Daniel Jones runs in, attacks your star safety, and Daniel Jones is on the ground getting the crap knocked out of him. Yeah, real good job, Giants. That's that discipline. You see, I'm starting to get a little bit antsy about our head coach here.
Already. I mean, you've only had Joe Judge for second season now.
Joe Judge was supposed to be a disciplinarian who valued his teams not being over emotional.
He didn't tolerate what just happened. He made the players do push-ups, laps, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, but
he didn't let this pass.
No, he didn't. But why did that even happen? There's no sense of team yet with this team. At least the Jets, when they talk about each other, you hear solidarity. You see players working together. It looks like on the Giants, you have a bunch of individuals trying to be stars.
Because Robert Saleh is not Joe Judge. Robert Saleh is a high energy guy. He wants you to play your best.
Well, so is Joe Judge. He's a high energy guy too. But
Saleh is a guy that's all gas, no brakes. You know, he's not afraid for the guys to let it go out there. Don't hesitate. Don't be give everything you have.
Yeah, but the Giants, you see, To me, it speaks of a lack of discipline amongst the roster. And Joe Judge had better turn that around, because a lack of discipline is what caused the Giants to not make the playoffs last year.
Sometimes a little fight like this can maybe develop a bond of chemistry down the road. You don't know that. Look,
okay, so Beast, let's say I beat the living crap out of you. Would you form a new chemistry and respect for me if I left you bloody on the ground?
I can actually give you a very good comparison. Thank goodness I watched the movie Miracle when I was young. Thank goodness.
Okay.
All right, there was a moment. The U.S. recruited a hockey team of two players, Jack O'Callaghan and Robbie McClanahan. Okay, these were two
players. Were these the guys that wrapped their hands in foil?
These two didn't like each other. They played on opposing teams, McClanahan for Minnesota, O'Callaghan for Boston. And let's just say O'Callaghan got called for a cheap shot that he didn't even do. McClanahan did the cheap shot. He got tossed out of the game while Minnesota won a national championship. Okay, now skip to the point here. Herb Brooks then brought two of them out on the line to basically go after a puck, basically on a breakout play.
Okay.
O'Callaghan then leveled McClanahan in the practice. Immediately, they went after each other. Punches thrown, curse and swearing, however you want to call it. And then Herb Brooks let him go. And then at the end of it, he basically told the guys, you want to settle old scores, you're on the wrong team. And yeah, he punishes players too for other matters. Like in Norway, when they tied the Norwegians, he hated it. He made them go back and forth on the ice until they literally tuckered out.
Yep.
But that eventually helped develop chemistry on the team. A hard, tough love approach did eventually allow the United States to bond as a team. And they went all the way to Lake Placid in 1980 and defeated the Soviet Union and eventually the gold medal. So if that could happen with Team USA in international hockey, it could certainly happen with the Giants with what happened in a practice with a little skirmish.
The only problem is this isn't a movie. This isn't an epic story. This isn't Team USA. This isn't fighting against the Soviet Union for your country's honor, because you couldn't fight a war against the Soviet Union with armies and military. So the Olympics were pretty much the only competition that the two countries had against each other. This is a lot different. This is day two of practice, and you have these guys beating the holy hell out of each other. And by the way, it isn't just two people. It was Evan Engram attacking somebody, then Logan Ryan attacking Evan Engram, Daniel Jones attacking Logan Ryan. No.
Evan Engram should have known better.
Evan Engram should be fined and suspend and
maybe he should be held
out of practice.
Maybe he should get kicked off the team next, right?
Well, a lot of Giant fans wanted him off the team before this.
After all, wasn't he also called Stone Hands? He couldn't catch he never could catch the ball when it was thrown to him, I believe, right?
Evan Engram is the most undeserving Pro Bowler I have ever seen in my life. When we come back, the MLB top 10. And wow, that stove is hot for both the Yankees and the Mets. But which moves are working out the best? We'll find out right after this. We're back to Downtown Sports. I am the mouth of the South, John Schiavone, along with my co-host, the Beast of the East, Jonathan Pariente. And we have an MLB top 10 to go through from our main man, Tony Mainville. We want to thank him for these MLB top 10s. Let's just get right into it. Number 10, for the third week in a row, the New York Mets. Javier Baez is a Met in his debut against the Reds on Saturday, on the 31st. He hits a home run. Edwin Diaz is not allowed a run in his last five appearances. He's 1-0 with four saves. He's seemingly turned it around. Not 2019.
Still, though, the Met offense worries me.
It does.
So you got Baez. He does have a high strikeout rate. And already the Mets, not only did the Mets, Mets were lucky they even came back to win that second game.
Yep.
Otherwise, they would have been swept, and they ended up losing 2 out of 3 to the Reds.
That wasn't
good. They've already lost last night to the Marlins in terrible fashion. McGill got lit up in the first inning. Mets never recovered from that, and the Mets are currently down 4-1 in the fifth right now.
You knew McGill was going to eventually get figured out. He was going to get shelled. It happens to every pitcher, especially young pitchers like him.
But the Mets can still afford to be struggling now when Phillies are breathing right down your neck.
That's the team that I predicted would make a run at that NL East at the end
and
of
right
the
now
season.
The Phillies,
it's going to be Mets-Phillies.
Phillies are up 1-0 at the end of 6 right now.
Not good.
Getting close. I the Phillies pen always worries me. I know they made some moves of their own. I
think the Mets are the best team in the NL East. I just don't think they deserve to be on this top 10 list right now. As much as I am a Met fan, they don't deserve to be here. Number 9.
Who we got?
The Oakland Athletics. Standing pat at number 9. Matt Olson is 3rd in the AL in OPS. Chris Bassitt leads the AL in wins with 11.
They made some nice additions also in the trade deadline. They added Starling Marte. They added Yan Gomes to kind of boost up their catching core. They were really low on catching as far as hitting as a catch in the catcher position. You add Marte, will deepen the lineup. You already have Matt Olson. You have Matt Chapman. You have good depth in the rotation. And I think things could start to turn. Oakland does hold the second wild card. Let's not forget that.
Yankees are breathing down their neck.
The Yankees have, the Mariners are also right there with them. So,
in fact, I might have switched the Mets with the Yankees if it were up to me.
I'm not ready to say anything with the Yanks yet. The offense is still up and down.
Granted, but I believe they have a better record than the Mets at this point.
Yes,
no?
They do. 56 and 49. Yes.
So,
slightly better than the Mets right now. Yes.
Even though the Mets are in first, your record is what it is, and I think the Yankees deserve that spot.
Mets are 55-50, and their record, and they're playing on the road right now, and their record on the road is terrible.
Yep. For the first time in a while, usually the Mets play garbage at Citi Field. Usually their home field is not a home field advantage for them.
They played well at home, but again, playing on the road is a lot harder than playing at home.
Especially when you're going to these BAM boxes in Philadelphia, in Florida, you know.
Yeah, those are not pitchers' parks. A lot of pitcher ballparks. Anyway.
Yeah, a lot of people. Marlins Park is not a pitcher's park. It's not. You'd be shocked, but it's not.
Well, the Yankees learned that for themselves over the weekend and took the Marlins and swept them in 3. Let's go to the number 8 team on our top 10. And who have we got at number 8?
Ooh, they've dropped.
Really? Who's dropped?
The San Diego Padres.
I'm not shocked.
Manny Machado's doing it.
Yeah, but now the Padres had to IL Fernando Tatis. He re-injured that shoulder that he dislocated earlier in the year.
Not good. Not good.
Not good. You lose Tatis now for at least a week. Maybe it could be longer than that. A shoulder injury. When you re-aggravate a shoulder like that, I'm scared if he dislocated it again. Maybe
that would be horrible. Okay.
That'd be the worst thing to happen.
Well, but let's get to the good news about the Padres. Machado over his last 5 games is hitting .412.
Okay. Machado
runs 4 RBIs. He's getting paid his $300 million and he's earning it right now.
I have to admit I was a little nervous at the time.
Mark Melanson.
Melanson's been doing well.
32 saves, leads the majors. That a good thing that the Padres bullpen is closing down games that they are ahead of.
Problem is the starting pitching stinks. Paddock's on the IL, injured. Yu Darvish has regressed. What's happened to the rest of the starting rotation has been just a disgrace. Lamette on the IL hurt. Clevenger's hurt.
And then on top of that, to add insult
Blake
to injury.
Terrible.
To add insult to injury.
Yep.
Max Scherzer becomes an LA Dodger when all the reports were saying it was pretty much guaranteed he was a Padre.
That's what I call a gut punch.
Mm-hmm. We're going to see if the Padres can even make the postseason at this point.
I'm not sure. I feel like now the Dodgers and Giants have turned it up to another gear. And I think the Padres, this is where they're going to start fading.
And this is where the NL East teams are going to start rising.
Yeah.
You're going to see the Phillies there at the end of this season. Whether I think both the Mets and the Phillies make the postseason. I'm calling it now. One as the division winner. one as the second wild card.
We'll see. Number seven.
Another team that's fallen. They've fallen fast.
Yep.
The Boston Red Sox have finally come down to earth a little bit.
Maybe their pitching now is not as it was public as it was televised as. Maybe it's not as good as people thought. You know,
the pitching was never that good.
Yeah. And they got swept. And they got swept by the Rays at the Trop.
Not good. And I mean, Boston's still the number one.
And now the Red Sox are no longer ahead in the East anymore. Now it's the Rays.
Well, they're still the number one wild card. The Red Sox will make the playoffs this year. I've noticed.
Not if they start to go on a skid and they start tailing.
Or if the Yankees make a – everybody's predicting that the Yankees are going to come up and they're going to make the postseason. They can make a run for the East. You know what? I'm not sure they can make a run for the East.
I don't think so.
However, that second wild card is not far out of reach for them.
They're only about two games out.
I think if the Yankees play the way that the Yankees are supposed to play, that they were advertised to play at the beginning of the year, they could overtake Oakland and be that second wild card.
All in good time. But the Yankees definitely need to start clicking it, like kicking it up a notch.
But the first thing they need to do, they need to start beating the Rays and the Red Sox.
Yeah, well,
they have to start beating these two teams. If they don't, they're not going to make the postseason.
They took two out of three from the Rays at the Trop, and they're not going to see the Rays again until the end of the season.
Yeah, but you got the Red Sox now.
Yeah.
Now you've got a lot of games of Boston to come up.
How about five more? That's it. You only got five more games.
That's still a lot.
Yeah, but five
more games. That's still a lot, considering.
That's not a lot. Including a two-game series at Yankee Stadium, then you have three games in Boston. That's not going to be very easy.
Yankees got to win all those games, though.
Yeah.
They have to win all of them because of how far behind they put themselves at the start of this year.
Well,
anyway, number six.
Number six.
The Brewers, standing pat.
Okay. Well, they did make some good additions during the trade deadline. They added Eduardo Escobar to boost that lineup of theirs a little more, and they got some pieces there they added another like couple of arms for the bullpen. You got Daniel.
Oh, Norris. By the way, Jacob DeGrom no longer qualifies to be the leader of ERA in the National League. Because right now, that's Freddy Peralta with a 2.17 ERA. Jacob DeGrom has no longer qualified for the top ERA spot in the league thanks to that injury. If he wants to be a Cy Young candidate or winner, DeGrom needs to come back. He needs to come back soon because right now, he no longer qualifies for the ERA lead in the National League. That currently belongs to Freddy Peralta of the Brewers. Woodruff at third in NL in ERA with 2.26. This is a pitching heavy team.
Yeah. And they got a lot more dangerous. They got a lot deeper. Rowdy Tellez was a great addition. You add Willy Adames. You now bring in Escobar with Yelich. When he's healthy, this team is dangerous. Right now, the only little blip right now is Josh Hader's out with COVID. So they don't have their closer for a brief little period, but
I don't think the Reds are going to challenge for this division.
They're way ahead of the Reds. They're like 8-9 games ahead of the Reds. They're not.
However, the Reds could challenge for some wild card spots, maybe, but I doubt that. The Brewers are the NL Central champions. I'm calling it on August 3rd. I know, but I'm calling it. I think the Brewers have the Central on lock. Here's another team that has a Central division on lockdown. Our number five team, and the team that I think will go to the World Series in the American League, the Chicago White Sox. Jose Abreu, fourth in the AL in RBIs with 78. Lance Lynn is leading the American League in ERA.
And the White
Yankee
Sox
fans, yes, Lance Lynn. Remember that guy that always screwed up every time he went on the mound for you guys? Leads the league in ERA.
Crazy.
Even after Spider Attack.
And to add to that, the White Sox got even more dangerous, adding Craig Kimbrell to the bullpen.
Ooh.
I mean, you already had Liam Hendricks, which was a bonus. Now you put Kimbrell in there.
And I think Kimbrell's going to be the closer.
We'll see. I think as of now, Hendricks is still kind of handling those duties. Maybe Kimbrell's kind of setting up.
We'll see.
If either of them can be a setup man and can literally shorten the game.
Yep,
that's how dangerous it's going to be.
in fact, Craig Kimbrell might be in that role that I described. And I think the best bullpen arm isn't always the closer. It's the guy that you put in to get the major outs of the game. I think that's Craig Kimbrell's role in the White Sox, perhaps.
Eloy Jimenez is back in this lineup now after he had been out for most of the year. You bring back eventually Luis Robert when he comes back from injury. I mean, this
White Sox, I think this team's going to the World Series.
Bats. They're missing literally one more bat, and this lineup's going to be even more dangerous. When you bring Robert back, you already have Anderson. You already have Abreu. You have Jimenez. You have Moncada. You have so much depth on this.
1-7 on that lineup is dangerous.
Yeah.
Tell me what other team you could say that about.
Except for maybe the Red Sox. That's about the only one I can think of.
Yeah.
Only the Red Sox have a lineup as bad as dangerous.
Yankees, if they're all firing on all cylinders.
That's an if. But the White Sox have been firing all cylinders since day one.
Yep. And that's the difference. I think Aaron Boone needs to go. Anyway, number four, the Rays.
Number four.
Wander Franco is hitting .389 over his last five games. And they overtook the Sox. And despite, once again, getting rid of players, they're still... It looks like they haven't lost anything. It looks like they gained something.
Yeah. They picked up.
I can never understand. You want to know what Mouth's Analytics book? We're picking up Mouth's Analytics book again. Yep. You want to know what Mouth's Analytics book says? That the Rays have analytics that we have no access to. They have best practices in that organization that really go against normal baseball logic, yet every single season. They're always in playoff contention.
During the trade deadline, the Rays traded away two of their guys. They traded away Tim. They traded Rich Hill to the Mets. So you figured, what were they doing getting rid of a pitcher when they don't really have a lot of starting pitching at the moment? And then they ended up dealing Diego Castillo to the Mariners. And they're playing the Mariners actually right now, speaking of which. At the same time, Wander Franco's starting to figure out how to hit, and he was a top prospect for a reason in the Rays system. And now you're maybe beginning to see a little bit of what Wander Franco is going to bring to the table. The only negative news, and this just happened officially today.
Okay.
Tyler Glasnow is out. Tommy John surgery. He will not be back this year. And that's a big loss to the Rays rotation.
Well, cheaters never prosper.
Well, we can talk about the cheaters talk to a blue in the face here, but Glasnow clearly had mentioned about the spider tack and the changing of the grip of the baseball. It obviously really affected him. And it really affected him to the point where he can't even pitch this year.
Shut up.
Now, if that was a player, Mouth, if that was Jacob DeGrom complaining about that and he had an injury like this, you will do anything but fake crying and doing fake tears with that with me.
I would be wanting DeGrom off my team. But that's
how about you
me.
Worry about the Mets and them deciding to screw getting Kumar Rocker when they found out about an arm injury that he has.
By the way, a former team president of the Marlins said that Scott Boris lied about Rocker and that he applauded the Mets for what they did. So basically, Scott Boris is lying about his player's health.
So he tried to pull a fast one on Steve Cohen.
By the way, the statement about Rocker was that there was no significant change from his 2018 MRI. You see, that statement could be taken in a lot of different ways. A lot of people think that means he's healthy. However, look at the way that those words were framed. No significant change from 2018's MRI. Have any of those reports told us what that 2018 MRI said? So if there's no change, that doesn't mean, that means he's healthy. Look, I know he pitched every start in 4 years in college, but if there's something wrong with his arm, and we know Boris will pull fast ones on teams. This is what he's known for. They got the 11th pick in the draft next year. And it's unfortunate that Kumar Rocker gets to start his MLB career off in such a terrible way. But,
are going to regain basically the draft pick they had.
That's yeah.
What ended up happening to the Mets. So they'll get back their pick.
So why are you going to give $30+ million to somebody who you don't know is going if they're going to be healthy or not?
you never know always how what these kids are going to do when they come out of college or out of high school. You don't know what they're going to become at the major league level.
Not at all.
You take a chance on every prospect you have, regardless of what sport.
So if you're going to tell me that the Mets should have, you know, put up 30 some odd million dollars. Nah, I don't agree with that. All number right. Three.
Number three. Who we got?
We have, let me just get that up quick. The Houston Astros.
Okay. Well,
Houston, our number three.
Well, Houston definitely got a little bit stronger. They added another couple of arms to their bullpen, which is going to make them very dangerous. Yimi Garcia, you get him from the Marlins, another former closer. And then this was the big move they pulled with the Mariners, which I was very shocked happened when it did. The Mariners are doing well. They were riding high. And then the Astros take their closer, Kendall Graveman. Jerry DePoto trades him to Houston. The Mariners get Abraham Toro. Seattle ended up losing the series to Houston, not to mention, even though Toro has been playing very well. Graveman was in tears. He couldn't believe he got traded. And now you're maybe, again, we don't know if it's going to ruin the momentum of the Mariners, but you have to worry if it will. And you get Diego.
The Mariners were a rebuilding team. Let me just say this really quickly.
Yeah.
Do you think the Mariners were going to make the postseason with the Athletics and the Yankees roaming around?
They were chasing for that second wild card. They were right outside the Oakland A's. They could, and they play the A's how many times in their division? They could easily have made a run at them.
Not saying that they still can't, but you got to trust the process if you're Seattle. But here's the thing. Lance McCullers is pitching well. 17 starts, 8-2, 3.23 ERA, 115 strikeouts in 97 innings.
Yep.
Not bad.
Granky. Okay, Granky.
Yuli Gurriel is hitting 526 over his last four games. Two home runs, seven RBIs in four games.
Yep.
The Astros just, ever since June, they've started winning and they haven't stopped.
Well, Houston has a lot of depth in their lineup. It doesn't surprise me. And even with Bregman, and this is without even Bregman in the lineup either. Bregman's been out with an injury. He's still rehabbing from a previous injury at third.
Yep. Yep.
But Altuve's been carrying the helm. Gurriel's done his job. They also just lost Brantley to an injury. Even Brantley got hurt just the other night.
But isn't it funny? When all the injuries started to happen for the Astros, that's when they started playing well.
They also built a good farm, so they have some talent in the farm that was ready to go, even though, again, they traded a few of those pieces away. They traded Miles Straw to the Indians to get Phil Maton, another piece for the bullpen. That kind of was interesting. Straw is one of their best base stealers. You trade him, which was very interesting. You have Kyle Tucker.
But the Astros needed arms. I mean, let's be real.
Yeah, but I mean, like, look, Kyle Tucker's carrying the helm good. He's fine. Good. You have, obviously, yeah, Altuve. You have Bregman. You have a couple of pieces they called up that have kind of patchworked the lineup, and you have Yordan Alvarez. So the Astros, they will never have a problem with the lineup itself. The lineup will never be a problem. But without Verlander in that rotation, you do have questions with their starting rotation. And obviously, Granky and McCullers cannot be the only two you have. They need other arms to carry that rotation.
But they don't have them, so.
Not yet. But the Astros are still going to be dangerous, regardless of how they get in or where they get in.
Look, I think the White Sox are the most complete team in the American League. That's just me. Number two. The Dodgers. Walker Buehler's back.
Yep.
3-0 with a 1.67 ERA in his last five starts. AJ Pollock is hitting 571 in his last five games.
Yep. You got back Corey Seager is also back in the lineup. So that's going to further deepen the lineup. The Dodgers had a lot of injuries at one point in the early.
Oh, yeah. By the way, Max Scherzer is a Dodger.
As if you couldn't have added more, another glut of good starting pitching. Now you add Scherzer.
Now, if I had to put the top three starters of the Mets versus the top three starters of the Dodgers, I take the Dodgers right now.
I have one question. How the Dodgers have all this money to get all these pitchers? You bring in Bauer, he flames out because of a...
You know, I don't know, because unlike the Yankees, their owners want nothing but championships. You know, and
they've
even
won
at the
one
trade
title
deadline,
in 30 years, they've won one title now since 1988. Great.
The Dodgers are basically your NBA super team right now. That's what they are. Top to bottom. They are the best. What? I don't see how the Dodgers don't get into the World Series, but the number one team in our top 10 might be the only one that could stop them. And that would be the Giants. Still, number one. They've been number one, I think, for the past 2 months.
Yeah,
I want to say
they've been at the top of that West, and you know. But give the Dodgers credit. Every time you thought the Giants were going to pull away, the Dodgers are right there.
But you give the Giants credit because when the Dodgers went out and made all those moves, the Giants made one, and it was a big one. The addition of Chris Bryant. And I think Chris Bryant completes that lineup. I think Chris Bryant provides excellent defense at third. He also could play left and right field, so he's versatile in the field. Mm-hmm. I think Chris Bryant is that toolbox player that the Giants really needed.
Well, he's made an immediate impact right away. And
he hit a home run against the Astros on Sunday, and the Giants, I believe, took that series from the Astros.
They did take that series 2 out of 3.
And that's why the Giants are currently number one.
That was a battle right there for the two top teams in baseball. The Giants and the Astros are right up there. They're the two top teams in the league right now.
Yep, they are. If you go by records, it's the Astros and the Giants.
I will not be surprised if maybe we have this matchup possibly for a World Series.
Unfortunately, I don't think the Giants are going to be in the World Series.
I think the Giants could get there. The lineup they have, the pitching they have.
I have to go with the Dodgers.
You know
right
the
now.
Mantra: good pitching stops good hitting.
Yeah, but the Dodgers have both.
The Giants are a very good situational type of offense.
So are the Dodgers.
They're a great fundamental team.
So are the Dodgers.
Yeah, the Giants, I think, are a little better when it comes to fundamentals, just by a hair. They have a little bit better fundamental. They have good contact.
The Dodgers are better pitching.
Yeah. Giants have very equal pitching too. Their depth is better. They have a good bullpen. They have good arms down there.
I think the Giants' pen's a little better than the Dodgers' pen. However, I take the Dodgers starting five over the Giants starting five any day of the week. Look, I know Glasnow's had a great. I know Gausman's had a great season.
Okay.
But Walker Buehler's done this before. Clayton Kershaw, when he comes back, has done this before. And Max Scherzer has definitely done this before.
I look forward when these two get on a stage. Maybe if they don't match up, maybe they'll match up in a championship series. I could definitely see that happen.
They could. They definitely could. I mean, look, all three teams in the NL West are very, very capable of making a run to the World Series. I'm not saying they aren't. I just don't think. I think the Giants next year are going to be a top contender for the World Series. They're not that they aren't now, but I think next year they might have a better shot. I think the Dodgers window is closing, but I think they have the biggest opportunity to win another world championship. They want to go back to back in LA, and they made moves.
I think the Dodgers have a couple more years. I don't think their window's closed yet. Not yet.
Not completely. You still got Mookie Betts though, who hasn't
too many. You have too many young talent. You have too much young players on this team to say that it's over. Cody Bellinger's still pretty young. Mookie Betts still has a good young few more years left in him as well.
Justin Turner's getting up there Seager's getting up there.
Yes, yes.
And by the way, Kershaw is getting up there. Without Kershaw, none of this happens.
Kershaw's 31, 32. He's getting into the prime of his career. 100% agree.
Without Kershaw, none of this happens, though. I mean, granted, he's on the injured list, but in the playoffs without Kershaw, this team doesn't win. But you know what? That wraps up the top 10.
And this edition of Downtown Sports.
Yep. I want to thank Krista Large. I want to thank Girl Friday. I want to thank Anthony Mainville. All of our staff who do such a great job for us every single week. Beast, where can they hear us?
You can listen to Downtown Sports on 14 different platforms. We're on Anchor, Breaker, Spotify, Radio Public, Overcast, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, CastBox, Bullhorn, Podbay, Listen Notes, Podcast Addict, and Verbal. We have Rant's Digital Market Battle specials every Tuesday, Wednesday, along with regular episodes just like this. We are Downtown Sports, and we are where sports come home. For the mouth of the South, John Schiavone, I am the Beast of the East, Jonathan Pariente, saying goodbye.
We out. Thanks for listening.